Hello and welcome to another episode of Propelling Talent, a podcast presented by Wired Workforce Mobility. Today we're going to be talking about sustainability, a topic we hear a lot about these days, and certainly a topic of increasing importance to workforce mobility. Here to inform and educate and enlighten us is Laura Levinson. Laura is the practice leader with Weichert's Advisory Services Group. And this is a topic that Laura is very passionate about. She's written extensively about it on our blog. There's also a white paper on our website on sustainability that you can download. She will also be participating in a panel on this topic this week at Worldwide ERC's Global Workforce Symposium. That's going to happen Thursday, November 19th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure you check that out. Laura, thank you for joining us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
When I think about sustainability, I think of finding ways for humans and business or innovation, if you will, the progress of things and the natural environment to coexist. How do you define sustainability in the context of the workforce mobility industry?
It's a good question, really, because I think so many people have different definitions for sustainability. And I think for most, the first thing that comes to mind is the environment. But actually, there are really three pillars of sustainability, and those are economic, environmental, and social. Or some people find it easier to remember the three P's: profit, planet, and people. So in the context of mobility, I like to think that it means something like meeting the needs of the present society without compromising future generations' ability to meet theirs. And in our context, it's about ways that businesses can carefully consider how to change or adapt the way they do business to make sure of this ability of future generations to meet their needs. It definitely does go beyond recycling and green practices, and also includes, in our industry, things like diverse hiring practices, pay equity, concerns about when we physically move people globally, how can we do this in a way that minimizes the carbon footprint? So you can see in our industry, mobility, that we can hit on all three of those pillars in different ways.
And can you talk about some of the ways that Weichert has been promoting sustainable practices?
Sure. I'm really very proud, actually, to have been involved in some of the documentation of what we've been doing. We have a very comprehensive strategy, which includes several partnerships. We partner with a company called Move for Hunger and another, which is called Discard and Donate. So these both pertain specifically to the household goods moves. So when folks are emptying out their homes and notice that they have cabinets full of food that doesn't make any sense to move, all that food that is, of course, still okay in terms of expirations and things like that can be donated to this organization called Move for Hunger, which provides food to the needy. And then Discard and Donate, that has to do with getting rid of things that you no longer want that can be then donated to various good causes. So that's like a real win-win because it reduces the cost of goods being moved, right? Because it's just less goods in general. And then it's benefiting other people. So that's a really, I guess I'd call that like a low-hanging fruit. And then going back to those three pillars, on the people side, we at Weichert are very actively engaged in diversity and inclusiveness training for our employees. Actually, I've done a lot of speaking on this topic externally at different conferences, but it's also a big initiative internally at Weichert. And then, of course, we also promote with our clients to use these types of organizations and to look for ways to help cut costs in their programs. So that could be in the context of my role in advisory services when I'm looking at a company's policy to suggest ways in which companies might even consider providing incentives to assignees who sell their homes faster or who are able to reduce their spend in some way by using less time in temporary living or using automobiles. They need to rent a car to use hybrid automobiles. So anything like this where some of our more environmentally conscious clients will provide some incentive actually to their employees. So with the savings, that savings gets shared. The company saves and the individual gets a little bit of an incentive. So everybody wins in that scenario as well.
And it's interesting that you mentioned our clients, because when you think about the mobility chain, it involves us as a relocation management company. It involves our clients. It involves the various partners that we work with to deliver services throughout the globe. Are there specific examples of sustainability that you see our clients or our partners utilizing that you would consider to be best practice or at least admirable?
Absolutely. I don't want to totally steal the thunder of the session for ERC, but Hilton Hotels, which is one of our clients, they've really been a model of sustainability in using not only the organizations that I just mentioned for their movers. So they use both Discard and Donate and Move for Hunger for their expats and assignees and all domestic transferees. But as a business itself, not just for their expat populations, their hotels have been practicing green initiatives for as long as I can remember. They've been reducing the use of water and promoting remote and touch-free check-in processes. They have great initiatives around reducing waste in food and in their restaurants, recycling. They look to reduce the amount of water used in the washing of towels and sheets and linens. So they are ideal, I would say, in terms of practicing what they preach, not only in their core business, but also in their mobility programs. So Hilton's a really great example. I can think of others where, as I mentioned before, they're providing incentives to folks who are somehow able to save money, either by selling their homes faster or just reducing the number of days that they need in temporary living, which is very costly for our clients.
What about among our service partners? Are there any companies that you would point to as providing a great example of how companies can be embracing and pursuing sustainability?
Oh, absolutely. I'll answer that in two parts. First, are companies in general that are practicing sustainability for years, and then those who have to rise to the occasion in the current situation of the pandemic. So first, moving services companies like Hildrep, who we interviewed for the ERC webinar, they, as a moving services company, of course, donate to Move for Hunger and use packing materials that are reusable and recyclable. They're all about using fuel-efficient vehicles and reducing the carbon footprint as much as possible. I know that they've also invested now in hybrid vehicles and electric trucks. So that is something that is bound to really make a difference in the long run. So that's the ongoing. In the current pandemic, we have also destination service providers who've done an amazing job of innovating and adapting to the current need for virtual, quote unquote, everything. And that, of course, has an impact on their ability to be more sustainable. So DSPs have replaced physical tours with virtual tours. They've reduced the number of days for look-see trips and house hunting visits because of their ability to do a lot more online. They have been able to show our clients potential housing online so that they don't have to look at every single property. So that's a big way. And in back again to the moving services industry, they've added virtual surveys. So folks don't have to have people coming into their home, which is good for COVID, but it also reduces the number of trips made to an individual's home, also cutting back on fuel and time spent in getting the information needed to make a move possible. So yes, I think that the current situation of COVID has really forced, if you will, in a good way, forced companies to look at ways to be virtual, which have definitely reduced the amount of driving that people are doing and the ability to increase virtual services.
So, well, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. So that's a great example there. Well, I know that part of your role, a big part of your role in advisory services is helping companies see around corners, helping corporate managers kind of anticipate things that could impact their or affect their programs and help them navigate such challenges. Looking ahead, how do you think sustainability will impact workforce mobility?
Well, looking ahead with the new administration coming into the U.S. with a new president, I think we'll be rejoining the Paris Accord. And Biden has committed to making investments in clean energy and to create more than a million new union jobs associated with that. So I think the new administration alone will result in a lot of changes. Besides that, there's an organization called SASB or SASB, which is the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board. And that is relatively new, not known to many, but it is bringing us to a point where it's going to be not a really a choice, but it will be a requirement to meet certain minimum standards based on the industry that a company is in. And this exists already. SASB is used in many governmental organizations and agencies. So I don't think it'll be too long before those requirements will extend into the private sector. So I'm kind of excited about that. And I think the time has come. Some people would say we've already passed the time, but no time like the present to start getting more involved and taking these needs more seriously.
Earlier on, you mentioned diversity and inclusion as being part of sustainability. I know that's something that, again, another topic that you've written extensively on and spoken extensively on it at industry conferences, both nationwide and globally. Can you just elaborate a little bit on how D&I ties into the idea of sustainability?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And sometimes these two topics are considered separate, but to me, there's a lot of overlap. So we'll talk about it in terms of pay equity as a first example. Pay equity is an important part of sustainability because giving people equal opportunity is how we sustain business and how we bring more women into the workplace and people of color and minorities and people of special needs. So what's happened in the COVID times, and part of that whole necessity being the mother of invention, is that we are seeing an increase in opportunity for people of color and women and people who otherwise would not have necessarily taken a transfer or an assignment, being able to perform roles and responsibilities that they otherwise would not have had. And at least those, maybe they're happening virtually at the moment, but once in place and proving their capability and competence, maybe now we'll see more people of color and more women entering the mobile workforce as well. So I think it's kind of a really interesting beginning of a blending and an opportunity for people to look, as I said before, look beyond the environmental and the impacts of sustainability and start looking more into the economic and people portions of that three pillars that I mentioned in the beginning. And just to remind everybody, those three pillars being economic, environment, and social, or the three P's, the profit, the planet, and the people.
All right, well, some great information there. And again, the GWS session, the Global Workforce Symposium session on sustainability that Laura will be a panelist for, along with Hilton and Hildrup, that's going to occur on Thursday, November 19th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So do check out Worldwide ERC's website, the GWS section, to find out exactly how you can listen to that. And we mentioned the sustainability white paper, which is available for download at our website. If you go to the About Us section of whiteworkforcemobility.com, you can find it there. We'll also throw it up on our social media so that folks have a chance to get a copy of that as well.
And Tim, don't forget, one of the great advantages to listening to the live stream is that there is a Q&A portion at the end of the session where we will be available, myself, Mark, and Bob from Hilton and Hildrup, respectively, will be there to answer questions that anyone might have.
Excellent. So you will have the chance to ask questions. If you have any questions after listening to this podcast, if you have any questions after the GWS session itself, you will get some live virtual FaceTime, I should say, with the presenters and the chance to ask them questions. Again, Thursday, November 19th, 2 p.m. Eastern Time at Worldwide ERC's website. Laura, as always, thank you very much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. And for those of you who are listening, thank you for joining us. And please stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you so much, Tim.